If it was only that easy. Xerox the money, Daryl Cherney. So, yes, I am here with Lee Clark, a man of principles and of friends of public banking of Santa Rosa. Hi, Lee.
Hi, how are you doing tonight?
Well, very good. Thanks for coming into the studio here.
Thanks for having me.
Public banking. First of all, tell us, can you give us just a brief description? What is public banking?
Right. So the notion of public banking has been around for quite some time in the United States. It goes back to the most commonly used example is the Bank of North Dakota, which is the longest standing public bank in the United States. And essentially, a public bank is a bank that is functionally owned by the government that it served and or the people that it serves. So it's essentially a people's bank, if you will.
In other words, the banks we normally associate, like Wells Fargo or things like that, they are shareholder owned. Is that a difference?
Essentially, yes. Yeah. So a public bank is functionally owned by its constituents. So it's owned by the municipality that it serves.
There's one in North Dakota, and how long has that been going, and why hasn't anybody else done it?
So the Bank of North Dakota has been around for quite some time. I don't have the founding date on hand exactly, but BND has a significant portfolio, including $669 million in agricultural loans, about $2 billion in business loans, and $1.4 billion in student loans. The BND is somewhat unique in that it was created a long time before we had significant financial regulations about banking at the federal level, and they had very few regulations at the state level about banking.
Huh.
And so, in many ways, the Bank of North Dakota is functionally doing business as the state of North Dakota.
Okay.
So it functionally is the state of North Dakota and is backed by the full faith and credit of the people of North Dakota.
Okay. And what's its track record?
It's been very successful. It has had the effect of displacing a lot of the activity that you would expect from large Wall Street banks in the business of acting as state depository or serving public financial needs. And it has created a rather resilient financial network in its active participation lending programs with local community banks and credit unions in the state.
So how do they... That's interesting. So they... There is the state bank, but then there still is an umbrella of other banks that work with it.
That's correct. And in the world of banking, the big issue has to do with capitalization. There are very strict regulations about how much business you can do based on how much available capital you have. This is for reasons to do with solvency. Obviously, we don't want a bank to become insolvent in the midst of doing business, and certainly we don't want that to happen when banking public funds.
Right.
Under any circumstances.
As we saw in 07, what happened when things were overspent or over whatever the phrase was.
Well, we had a condition. Yeah. We had a condition of insolvency that with a number of these gigantic Wall Street banks. And so anyone who looks at systems, can tell you that when you want to make a robust system, you remove single points of failure.
Hmm.
Essentially, in our financial system, we have gigantic single points of failure that are the Wall Street banks. By creating a robust network of public banks and by creating strong partnerships between those commercial public banks and retail local community banks and credit unions, we have what starts to look much more like a decentralized network that is much more resilient to large financial corrections.
And bypasses those problems, basically.
Or acts as a buffer, right? Hmm. You could think of it almost like a dam or a series of dams. With the financial disaster of 2008, we had all of the cities and counties and state governments, all of them at some point or another relied on these gigantic Wall Street banks. Right. So did many of the people who were relying on them for their mortgages. We had all of these people relying on just a few, very few number of very gigantic financial institutions. Mm-hmm. So instead of having a small number of gigantic financial institutions, we propose a much larger number of smaller institutions.
Sounds healthier, doesn't it?
We think so.
Well, that's it. It always reminds me, you know, being British, always reminds me of Napoleon's comment about the British. People thought it was a sneer, but actually it was a compliment because he said the British were a nation of shopkeepers. Mm-hmm. But that really went to their strength because it was many people, you know, individuals, you know, being their own, doing their own thing.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
That was powerful.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's exactly where we think that moving into, it's here in the state of California, we have a very unique economic situation. We have a rampant economy, right. And a hugely productive and creative force to be reckoned with in the world economy, compared to other countries. Right. And yet we are also, again, as a byproduct of that great economic success, it's become very difficult to live here. Property values are sky high, rents are sky high, cost of living is very high.
Right.
We have an increasing socioeconomic inequality. That's another part that's another major driving force for the public banking movement is to address specifically housing insecurity and housing inequity.
It's interesting because of obviously the new marijuana regulations and that the feds haven't caught up with that there's this whole thing swirling about obviously the cannabis industry in this
right.
county and state.
So a lot of people want to put the cannabis banking problem into the laps of the public banking community. Chong's recent cannabis banking working group commissioned their feasibility study for a public bank to bank cannabis in California. And while when I say we, I'm talking about the California Public Banking Alliances. While we do not necessarily address cannabis in our legislation, we did have strong opinions about that feasibility study, which found that cannabis banking was infeasible for the public banking business model. Mm. And it specifically for the very specific reason that it puts an enormous business risk or perceived business risk and potential criminal liability directly with the state of California in the case of a public bank being run directly by the state of California because of the Schedule I nature of the substance. The AG actually delivered part of his finding in a sealed finding, so it's not actually public information, and it's privileged communication, which is not terribly uncommon, but in this case is very intriguing. Many of us in the public sector would like to know what that finding was specifically, and what the reasoning was around that.
And is there legal ways to obtain it?
At this time, we don't really have a position about that. We believe that what we generally say is that there is nothing inside of the state legislation that would preclude a cannabis bank from occurring. But public banking is not about cannabis. Public banking is about reinvesting profit from lending, and it's about creating the opportunity to divest deposited monies from large banks that have very poor performance when compared using this CRA, the Community Reinvestment Act. Banks like Wells Fargo and Chase and other banks that have dismal records when it comes to reinvesting in the communities that they serve or do not serve.
Well, tell us a bit about yourself, Lee. How did you get involved? What brought you to public banking?
So I'm a 20-year IT professional, and I've worked in corporate IT. Also worked quite a bit organizational development with nonprofits off and on through the years. I kind of did this kind of pendulum back and forth between the nonprofit community and the private sector.
In the real world, yeah.
Yeah, and literally, I mean, that's basically what it was. I'd work until I ran out of money, basically, and then I'd go and get a quote-unquote real job. When the crash occurred, I lived here in Santa Rosa. I was, you know, deeply affected by that, by that economic situation. I got involved with a lot of people who were looking at local economic resilience and, you know, people who were involved with Go Local here, people like Phil Beard and others, people who's, you know, involved with the Share Exchange here in Santa Rosa. And that really got me interested in looking at economics as a, like a hacker. And really, like, I had been kind of, you know, learned everything I learned from IT. I'm a Linux user and an open source fanatic, and had learned all of my chops I developed myself, learning by myself and building from the ground up. And so I started that pattern looking at economic disparity, economic injustice. You know, my father was a communist in the old school way, and and I grew up in a very kind of an off-grid kind of lifestyle when I was a kid, and so I had this view of economy as being a kind of a tilted game, and so looking at it like from the outside looking in, almost like a hacker looking to break through the rules and to get to where the gold was, and looking at opportunities to disrupt the system and to cause transformational change, right? I got a regular job and all of that kind of went into my back pocket, and I didn't think about it for four or 5 years. And then I lost my corporate job to a layoff, and we were looking at the legalization of cannabis in California. And the single largest problem in California is banking cannabis right now. And so I spent, 2 to 4 years building a private reserve system for banking cannabis, and then having my corporate lawyers telling me that it would invoke a RICO investigation and I needed to cut it out. On the other side of all of that, I was like, okay, I have built this whole system. And where else can I deploy this? And so I started looking into the area of human benefit, and which isn't far of a step from cannabis, actually. If you really understand that industry.
Right.
So I, looking into the area of human benefit and looking into the area of time banking, and direct exchanges and barter economy and the economy of abundance, and the notion that, really, in our economy, we exist under this illusion of scarcity, and that the illusion of scarcity for us is created with the Federal Reserve, and the way that the Federal Reserve creates dollars that using short-term loans between the Federal Reserve Bank and the very large institutional banks that then in turn loan money out to other smaller banks, which is how our money system works.
Right.
So you start to look at that very carefully, and you start to see that the whole notion of scarcity is required by our economy, not required for any economy, but for our economy currently, that's requirement, and that it's almost entirely illusory. You start looking at the business structures for like these large banks, and you start to see that the banking process itself is actually highly efficient. It's and the regulations are very stringent. There's not a lot of room for these banks to actually wiggle around in.
They've seen it all, the regulators, over the years.
Oh yes, they certainly have. And the compliance is very strict. where the problem lies is in governance. The problem lies in the notion of fiscal primacy.
Can you explain that?
So when you're looking at a corporate structure or a set of bylaws, and you look at a for-profit company, the primary mission for that company is to return profits to its shareholders. Of course, it's a capitalist company, it's a for-profit company. It's, you know, that's what it's for, is to return profits to its shareholders. Well, something very interesting happens when you don't prevent it from making a profit, but you change the mission of the company. So all of a sudden you have a company that is designed to house people who don't have houses.
Right.
And then all of a sudden you have a company, like a bank, that its sole primary mission is to create affordable housing for people, and it becomes their job to turn that into a viable business.
Right.
And so all of a sudden you flopped everything, right? And then of course you subject them to sunshine laws, and you make them, you make their governance directly overseeable by the people that they serve, and you subject them to the same strict oversight that the, that other banks are subject to.
Right. So, yeah, you've got to have that equal standing there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How does it differ, say, from credit unions?
So a credit union is functionally owned by its members. And we're looking at something that is really hasn't been done before, and actually isn't even reflected in the Bank of North Dakota, in that we're looking at creating an organization that, you know, is functionally wholly owned by the agency that it serves, like that it has robust insurance for deposits, and that is allowed to hold local agency money, and that explicitly doesn't compete with other local banks and credit unions. A credit union is functionally a retail institution. It's largely a retail institution, usually.
Right.
You know, it serves individual people. And it provides checking accounts, saving accounts. You can get loans. Sometimes you can get a credit card. The credit union is actually a membership organization that is where it's functionally owned by its members.
Can you describe where you are now with what you have, what proposals you have, or what are there out there, and where are we, and what is the process moving forward?
We are. And when I say we, you know, it's the California Public Banking Alliance is essentially pushing forward legislation at the state level to create a charter for a public bank. And the way that the legislation is formed is designed to be an enabling framework type legislation. So instead of being prescriptive and actually creating a bank using legislation, we're actually creating a framework and a charter and an oversight process for what could be a number of public banks to then create a business plan and file for review by the DBO, the Department of Business Oversight in the state of California. There are stub bills that have been filed. There are RNs that are open at the state level. We're like waiting with bated breath for some really exciting news coming about co-authorship about this bill.
That's what I was about to ask. Who's
talk about
sniffed
that yet? We're
at
not.
It,
yeah, I cannot discuss that at this time. Okay. But keep your eyes peeled. There's some tremendous news coming about that in the very, very near future. There's a lot of support. There's a lot of interest. We've gotten a lot of interest at the assembly level and at the Senate level. So our fingers are crossed. We are marching on Sacramento. We are in okay. offices. We are, you know, on the telephone with legislative directors. We're in regular contact with Ma's office, who has been very gracious.
Oh, and Fiona Ma.
Yes. Her office has been very gracious and legislative director is, you know, we're in direct contact with her. Things are looking very interesting.
So what would be the process once you say you get that and it goes through the various houses and state stuff? What would it look like ultimately?
Well, essentially, we're short order. We're essentially looking at this charter that can be then applied for by a local municipality or a regional entity, like a joint powers authority, for instance,
okay,
or a county, for instance, or the state of California itself. If the state wanted to create a statewide public bank, okay, they could use the same charter framework. Or if some combination of counties wanted to get together to create a regional bank, and the framework does not specify use cases, a number of different use cases are at hand. I think I've mentioned an infrastructure and housing public bank. Municipal depository is another use case. There are quite a few other.
So it's very flexible, really, that architecture you've created.
Yes, it's designed to foster innovation in that area. Yeah.
Obviously, with the regulate, you know, you've got to dot the I's and cross the T's to obviously make it fly.
All of these banks are subject to the same rules and regulations that any commercial bank is subject to. So it would be subject to, in order to get a master account at the Federal Reserve, it would be subject to federal banking regulations. It would be subject to federal FTC regulations and SEC regulations. It would be subject to direct oversight by the Department of Business Oversight. It would be subject to state laws that very strictly regulate collateralization and capitalization requirements for financial institutions that hold public funds. It would also, our legislation explicitly requires a public bank to be a registered California benefit corporation. And in order to be a California benefit corporation, it has to be audited every year to make sure that it is actually providing a benefit to the people that it serves. The bank is would then also subject to sunshine requirements. Transparency is mandatory at the governance level. Is a functionally must be. There are very strict limitations about the relationship between the municipality it serves and the bank itself. So it has to be wholly controlled by the whatever municipality or region that it serves.
Right. Well, it sounds like it's been nailed down pretty good then.
A lot of very smart people have been working on this for a long time.
We've been finding out what public banking is generally. Lee, what's it going to mean to Santa Rosa? How is it coming here? How will that happen?
We're organized as functionally a non-organization, an advocate group of citizens. The California Public Banking Alliance is the statewide organization, and I serve on their legislative working group. Then there are a bunch of regional groups inside of California, including in Eureka, Mendocino, Santa Rosa, San Francisco, the East Bay, Silicon Valley and South Bay, Santa Barbara and Los Angeles, and also in San Diego. Here in Santa Rosa, you know, the Friends of Public Banking in Santa Rosa really came out of the no-dapple movement and the divest movement.
The no-dapple?
Yeah, so this is about the Dakota Access Pipeline.
The Dakota Access Pipeline, yeah. Right.
This group has started out as making a demand for ethical banking. That sounds great, but how do you make that happen? And really, how do you make that happen in a way that protects the public money, the money that's invested in trust by the professionals of our city in the coffers inside of the city of Santa Rosa? The way that there's been a kind of a recipe about that that has come from national organizations around public banking that has been really, you know, request a feasibility study, request a business plan to be created, and then attempt to create the bank. Well, it became really clear that in many municipalities,
it's just not possible to even do the bank because the legal framework doesn't exist to let it happen.
Right.
There are a lot of really thorny issues about risk and invested funds and funds availability. We're really in a place now where we're rewriting this kind of recipe. We're saying, well, instead of putting it on to our city government to fund a feasibility study, which could cost hundreds of thousands of dollars, and there have been other feasibility studies in other cities,
okay.
And they all come back, this is really difficult and complicated, and I don't know if we can do this. That's usually what the feasibility says. And there are very few areas in the state that have really created robust business plans. And San Francisco is like well on its way to having a multi-scenario business plan that was like really has teeth, that was, you know, where a lot of very talented people with a lot of experience kind of developed this plan.
Okay.
In Santa Rosa, we're trying something new. We're actually working on developing an external group. We're essentially calling it a finance and capitalization strategy working group. Hmm. And this working group is essentially composed of working financial services industry professionals, finance-related staff from city and county governments, economists, financial analysts, and bankers. We expect to develop a pro forma for a public bank and a kind of a meta business plan that can provide templature for various different use cases,
right.
And a capitalization strategy that employs that encourages innovation in the area of capitalizing a public financial institution.
Yeah, because it's two ends of it, isn't it? It's getting the money in and then sending it out. Yeah.
Indeed. And working out the governance, mm-hmm. making sure that the governance works and where it's accountable. Also that it's not, and this is quite a concern at the state level, that the governance is not overly subject to political influence.
Exactly. Anything that gets under the control of politicians.
And so a lot of what happens is that you want to have accountability, so you want elected officials, but then you have a political person on the board, and so like you see how the influence finds its way into the governance structure. So a well-balanced, transparent governance structure is a pivotal requirement.
Right.
And so we're actually developing an external group of people and we're going after these thorny issues and we're then working with the state level organization and external review both at the county and the local regional levels to get feedback.
Right. Once you got this, say, together, would it be voted on by the people of Santa Rosa? How would this come into being?
Well, the way that this is set up could be done via a referendum. Los Angeles, there was recently a measure that was a grassroots attempt to create a public bank in Los Angeles without a business plan or a feasibility study.
Wow.
Or much of anything else, really, just out of the pure
desire.
Just
a shopfront.
Well, they really wanted to create it, and they wanted to see how it could happen, and they got it onto the ballot, and it failed, but it failed with 44%. Mm-hmm. Supporting the measure with less than $20,000 spent on the campaign.
Wow.
To give you an example of what's on the opposite side of that I think it was around $12 million was amassed to in opposition.
Wow.
And you can guess who's behind that opposition.
Really?
I don't believe
no prizes actually, for
they actually didn't even need to spend that money. That money was available for the opposition for that measure. And so that is one way that it could happen. It could happen by a public referendum. It could get onto a ballot, become a ballot measure. It's more likely that we would see a council vote, which is more how it's happening in the Bay Area, or the supervisors having a vote.
Right.
And making a determination and instantiating in that way. And here in Sonoma County, we're looking very closely at recent developments after the fires and the recovery efforts there. the Sonoma County has formed what they're calling the REDJPA, which is basically a joint powers authority that's formed between the Sonoma County and Santa Rosa, and which could theoretically be extensible through a number of other counties and cities throughout the greater region. And they, I believe that they are starting to look at a CDFI and revolving fund type models for financing recovery and rapid recovery. And this is specifically an answer to the fire conditions.
Right.
And this is a classic, you know, yet another use case for a public bank, you know, is specifically to provide resiliency after major disasters.
Right.
You know, as you are, I'm sure you're aware, you know, 2,000 homes were destroyed in this last flood event, you know, after this atmospheric river in West County here in Sonoma. These types of flood conditions, these fire conditions are going to continue to happen. Our economic viability as a county is on thin ice. We're on thin ice here in the city. City council had to lay off police officers. They had to lay off fire officers. The fire department has stated that they will not be able to provide support to out-of-county fire events due to a lack of staff and coverage. The general fund conditions are under serious threat because of the expenditures in recovery to the last fire situation. And it's not getting better. We need a new way of investing in our community, and we need a new way of creating capital and developing robust means of recovery for these disasters as they occur.
It all does come back and links in around, doesn't it? Because, regular bank, they can up their roots and leave any time, as we've seen all around the county over the years. Many small places that banks have disappeared and are not providing services. So we've got to close those gaps up.
That's right. Bank of America and other major banks make decisions about exiting a market based on the ROI. The fact of the matter is that banking is a pivotal core part of the financial network that forms the backbone of our economic system. And we see banking as a utility, and it really is a public service, and it should be treated as such.
Yeah. That's a very good point. Very good point. I notice it has been included in the new Green Deal plan.
So, public banking has been mentioned. A lot of political types will start yelling public banking because it sounds so awesome. It's a really compelling story. I don't know exactly how much these people actually understand about the implications of public banking at the federal level or just how significant a legislative change might be necessary, especially as it relates to the Federal Reserve, and certainly how much concerted bipartisan support would be required in order to make something like that happen.
Hopefully more than what Dianne Feinstein exhibited, I hope.
Yeah, we'll see what happens there. My fingers are certainly crossed, and we are definitely reaching out at the federal level to many Green New Deal authors and others who are in the banking community who are driving accountability, people like Maxine Waters, who for a long time have been looking to hold the Wall Street banks to their legal obligations under the Community Reinvestment Act.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Why don't you let everyone know, Lee, how they can contact you and get more information about this great work you're trying to do, because it sounds like we really need it.
If you're interested in public banking, you want to get involved with the movement, you're welcome to visit us at www.publicbanksantarosa.org. That's all one word. Feel free to sign up for our newsletter there on the website. Also, you can follow us on Facebook by going to your facebook.com and just typing in Public Bank Santa Rosa into the search line, and you'll find us. Share and become our friend, and feel free to show up at our meeting.
Yeah, well, thank you, Lee Clark, Friends of Public Banking of Santa Rosa.
your index is low.